you keep hitting the same walls with your team, your workload, your life.
You know what they say about insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results?
Are you ready to break the cycle? Engineer your success. Insiders is Dr. James Bryant's private podcast. It's like having a coach in your corner focused on helping you win at work and home.
One story, one insight, one action to help you focus on what matters most.
Join at engineeryoursuccessnow.com/insiders.
I got interested in AI very selfishly. I like to work and I tend to keep working probably well into my 70s. I live and work in Silicon Valley, the most ageist place in the world. If you're not 28 in a hoodie, you're an idiot. When I played with GPT, I'm like, this thing's smart.
Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
Welcome to the Engineer Your Success podcast. My name is Dr. James Bryant, your host for the show. This podcast provides tools, tips, and techniques to help you win at work and home. Today, I have a really cool guest, Mr. Greg Shove. He's a seasoned entrepreneur, and he's launched and led over seven companies, including one that exited for over $150 million exit. He's also spent years navigating the fast-paced world of Silicon Valley and now leads two ventures focused on building practical AI-powered tools for business. Whether you're an engineer, leading a team, building a business, or just trying to stay ahead of the curve, I think Greg's going to bring perspective on the rise of AI for your future. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. James.
Glad to have you here. Greg, why don't you tell us about your background?
First, you need to know I'm Canadian and grew up in England and Great Britain. So, you know, I've come from more of that socialist world as a kid and a young adult. And that's why I came to America. I wanted to test myself and bring my ambition to a country where I felt it was more of a meritocracy, more of an economy that would reward ambition and hard work. I didn't have the network or connections. I got lucky, though. So listen, I had a lot of advantage. I was able to get to Silicon Valley with my wife and two young kids and get started in the tech. I've been here 35 years, seven startups, either founding or running small companies. I don't like working for other people. And I've had that pretty typical range of success. What I would say is a real Silicon Valley career, not the ones you read about, because the ones you read about don't happen very often. You don't usually start your company, you know, get to $100 million in revenue and sell it for $1 billion. That's just what, you know, everybody wants to talk about that, you know, the Silicon Valley dream. If you think that's going to happen, you're drinking the Kool-Aid. My career is more typical. I've had a couple good exits, a couple total failures. I've had a couple companies that kind of went nowhere. Most of it just hard work. The exits meant I got lucky. There's much more luck in life and business success than people realize or admit. I've got lucky a couple of times. I've worked really hard. I've lost myself, James. So when you talk about how not to lose yourself, I remember one moment pulling over. I was driving home late at night from my startup, from the office. This is probably 15 years ago now. I was younger and stupider. And I was driving home. I pulled over and just to kind of reflect. And I remember saying to myself, I'm going to save this company. I'm going to make this company work. If it costs me my marriage, I'm willing to pay that price. It won't cost me my relationship with my kids, though. I'll preserve my relationship with my kids. That's what I said to myself. That's how insane I was. That's how lost I was trying to save that startup. We were in the middle of a pivot, and I was so anxious to find product market fit. I was anxious to save my reputation, business, investor capital, and show I could generate a return. When I reflect back, I think that was nuts. Obviously, I'm still married and very grateful for Cindy, my partner, 40 plus years. There are moments you can lose yourself. That is the cost of entrepreneurship. It's hard to build companies, to start things that don't exist. It's hard to build products you want to bring into the world. And I think there is an irrational amount of commitment and belief and conviction required. And, you know, it's meant to be hard. It's why most companies fail. And so, you know, I look back on that company. We sold it. years later for $150 million. And so we got a good exit for investors, employees, and myself. But it took a real toll on me and on our marriage and on my kids, on our family. I'm not proud of that. I didn't know how else to do it at that moment. I didn't have a better way.
Yeah,
I think it's a little wiser today.
I would love to dig into this more. So you're saying if I have to give just about everything for this company to survive, I will accept my kids, my life, but I'm going to continue to give it all. What brought you back from that declaration?
That's a great question. I think what brought me back was walking in the house and realizing what an amazing woman I live with. And why would I ever, you know, want to sacrifice that or lose that? Probably a little bit of success, meaning the business started to work. It's those deep holes where you can't see a way out or nothing's working. It's your relentlessness and unwillingness to give up. There are moments where that is probably the only thing that, you know, that matters and that carries you through. Then you get a little bit of green shoots, a little bit of revenue, you get a little bit of customer satisfaction, and you know, whatever it is, you get a little bit of evidence of success. Then you can ease up a bit. You can breathe and you can sort of, you know, just kind of realize that, yeah, it's working. Maybe not as well as you want yet, or maybe not as fast, but it's working. When nothing's working, that hasn't happened often in my entrepreneurial career, but it does happen. The current company I'm CEO of, a couple of years ago, it was one of those moments. Nothing was working. The business wasn't growing. We were treading water. We were just going nowhere. We weren't dying and we weren't succeeding. It's kind of the worst place, right? When you think about companies and almost any effort in life, you either want to be moving forward or you probably want to stop. But sometimes you just can't. Sometimes you got to stay in place and sort of kind of muscle through it or, you know, just work through it. Yeah, I think what happened, James, is I got home and started to see a little bit of this working and realized, okay, I didn't need to have a death grip on the wheel. I could ease up and things would go in the right direction. The business started to turn around. 2 years ago, we were treading water. AI happened. February the 1st, 2023. The first day I spent several hours playing around with ChatGPT, I realized, okay, this is wild, right? This is something I haven't ever experienced before in technology. I'm old. I got interested in AI very selfishly. I like to work and I tend to keep working probably well into my 70s. I live and work in Silicon Valley, the most ageiest place in the world. If you're not 28 in a hoodie, you're an idiot. When I played with GPT, I'm like, this thing's smart. This could help me, right? This is, you know, I kind of think about AI as when you use it, you're borrowing 30 points of IQ and you're not paying for it. So why would you not want to borrow 30 points of IQ every day when you went into the office or frankly at home, right? So that was a light bulb moment for me. And that's when I pivoted the business.
Let's talk about your current business and what you're doing, because I think it feeds into this discussion.
I've got two companies. One is Section, I'm the CEO. The other is a company called Machine and Partners, which I'm the chairman and lead investor in. Both are trying to take advantage of this wave, this AI wave. Section is focused on training workforces to adopt and use AI every day and get that cognitive edge, get that kind of, you know, borrow that 30 points of IQ and really upskill, up-level the whole team in terms of its productivity, in terms of its decision-making and so on, using AI. Machine and Partners is doing something different. It's building AI applications for other companies. So that's a development, an AI development lab. That business, small business, it's less than 10 employees. That business is building custom AI applications for companies. Both are trying to take advantage of what is a wave and a wave of growth. And that's probably my number one lesson from the last 35 years working in Silicon Valley. Growth is powerful. You can execute in a mediocre way, but growth can solve for that. In a low growth or no growth industry or company, it's really tough. Everybody's fighting over a shrinking share of the pie. You have to execute flawlessly if you are working in a no growth company or a no growth industry. So my advice to any young person or any person is find growth, whether it be geographical growth or industry growth or company growth. It doesn't matter, but try to position yourself where it's growing and do great work. Work hard, you know, put in a solid shift. But when I played with AI, I'm like, okay, this is the next big growth wave. And competitive, obviously, when you get a big disruption like this, lots of startups, people hanging out their shingle as AI experts, influencers, consultants, it's going to attract a lot of other people and competitors. But growth is just a very powerful kind of force when you try to build a business or a career.
Growth is the major equalizer. You have more margin for error in a high growth industry in a low growth environment, there's little room for error.
That's right. Growth gives you room to breathe, right? Room to make mistakes, room to experiment, try things. And growth also, if you get in early, you can be an expert, a thought leader, a resource for clients or your community. If you do the math, it feels like 5, 6, 7% of the world is playing with AI. If you're in that 5 or 10%, that means you have an ability to be a resource. You could be a coach to a family member, a neighbor, or someone in your community or church and help them be good at AI. If you're good at it, you can see the value offered to others.
Okay. What are some other challenges you see with the adoption or growth of AI?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge we have right now is the technologies are just moving at such a pace in terms of improving at such a pace. These tools are getting better, smarter, faster, more than we can keep up. This is not typical software. It's more like the co-intelligence we can work with to make ourselves smarter. And so it's getting smarter fast, and we have a hard time keeping up. Second is, you know, it really challenges our beliefs about work. You know, when we have a lot of beliefs about work around working hard and not cutting corners, not cheating, for example. When you talk to people about using AI at work, they'll often say, it feels like cheating. You're working smart, not cheating. AI challenges old beliefs about ourselves, work, and the value we create. The third thing is, I don't think the media is helping. I don't think all the pundits, the gurus, the predictions, AI is going to take all our jobs. AI is going to, you know, kind of run humanity. We're all going to be unemployed, picking up UBI checks. When AI, you know, it's just nonsense. But I think it's scaring people, creating anxiety. And when we fear something, we often avoid it. Right? Just human nature. If there's something that's making us anxious or scaring us, or, you know, we tend to avoid it. We tend to go in the other direction. Right? And that's how we're programmed as humans, right? Run in the other direction. But that's not the right response to AI. I think the right response is, frankly, get your hands on it, start playing around with it, get good at it, and ignore the hype about how it's going to find the cure for cancer, it's going to find the cure for climate change. Or I ignore all the hype and I ignore the gloom, which is also exaggerated. AI makes mistakes. But the reality is it's neither. The reality is the truth is in the middle. It is part genius and it's part clown. It's this very young tool or technology. It's 3 years old, right? But it's very powerful. It does make mistakes, but I think we need to get our hands around it and start to integrate it into our daily lives. That's probably really the biggest message I have for your audience, James, is that I want your audience playing with AI every day, working with, having conversations with AI. You know, as a thought partner, you make a living giving people good advice. When they can't talk to you as a coach, you know, they can talk to AI because you're not available 24/7 and you're not free. Sometimes when you need advice, AI is a great thought partner. I use AI all the time, and I'm sure you do as well. And I think that's just a great superpower of AI, actually, that we can all take advantage of.
People make the mistake, I think, of believing that you're going to put something into AI and you're going to get back a polished, finished product. And that's not the case. It's a starting point. And it's like the whole concept of garbage in equals garbage out. So if you're not writing the correct prompts or writing prompts that really express what you're looking for, you're not going to get the result that you want. And just like any tool, you have to check and make sure that it is functioning correctly. You don't just put it in there and say, okay, now I'm going to give this to a client, or now this is the answer, and that's it.
Yeah, that's really good advice. James, I talk about it as, are you an AI passenger or an AI driver? And I do think a lot of people, unfortunately, will be passengers, meaning they'll take the lazy route. And listen, again, as a species, we like to find hacks and shortcuts, and we like to remove friction from our lives in order to create time to go do something else. It's who we are. And big tech is good at building these solutions, whether it be Netflix or Uber or now Waymo, in terms of removing friction from our lives. And AI, I think, is another example of this. It's a genius product that big tech has come up with, Silicon Valley's come up with, and it removes friction in terms of thinking. It removes cognitive friction. I think a lot of people, unfortunately, will take the shortcut route, which is cut and paste, as you said, right? Put in the question, get the answer, cut and paste, hit send, hit submit, stick it in the deck, and call it a day and go walk the dog. Good luck with that, I think, but a lot of people are going to do it. They're going to be what I call AI passengers. I think that, frankly, puts them at more risk professionally, in terms of their value and their employment. I think the right way to do it is be a driver, drive your AIs or manage your AIs, And to your point, you got to learn how to prompt, learn how to have good conversations with them. And then you have to critically look at kind of that output and frankly, add your own genius. Everybody gets the same superpower. So yeah, there's an advantage now for people who use AI, but think about it in 5 years, everybody's using AI. Every kid out of college joining our companies and joining our teams, they're going to be AI native. They're going to be using AI all the time. So using AI will not be an advantage. We all get the same superpower. As a boss, I want people that take the V1, they take the draft they get from AI, and to your point, they make it better. They bring their judgment, they bring their creativity, they bring their intuition.
For me, all along the way, I'm challenging the AI. Hey, why did you make this decision? Here's what I'm thinking. So tell me why I'm wrong. I want you to tell me what's the flaw in my logic or what am I missing?
Exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, that's what you do with a great thought partner, right? I would come to AI with this mindset of it's not my Google replacement. It really is something quite new and different. And it has the potential to be a really smart thought partner. By the way, a thought partner that crosses all the boundaries that humans don't cross very easily. Meaning when you think about us humans, we tend to have one language, maybe a couple, but usually one, right? We have experience in one or two industries. We typically have experience in one or two types of jobs or functions, right? We're sales or we're marketing or we're a software engineer, whatever. We have an experience based on living in one country, typically, maybe a couple, but usually not more than that. AI has none of those blind spots or none of those kind of restrictions. Crosses all boundaries, countries, industries, functions, languages, seniority. AI can be a chairman, CEO. AI can be a kid. It's just, it really has this ability that we don't to cross any kind of constraint or boundary. So as a thought partner, that makes them incredibly valuable. Your AI can be a doctor in the next moment. Your AI can be a financial analyst. None of us have a thought partner like that. None of us have a mentor in our lives. If we're lucky to have a mentor in our lives, and a lot of us don't, but if we're lucky to have a great mentor or a coach, likely not someone that can do that, that can jump from, that can write code and also be a creative designer. It's crazy, right? What AI can do.
Everyone expects you to have all the answers, but who's asking you how you're doing? Who's helping you think through your challenges? Engineer Your Success Insiders is my private podcast designed specifically for you. It's like having a coach in your corner focused on helping you win at work and at home. One story, one insight, one action that you can take, all wrapped up into real coaching insights that you can use. Join at engineeryoursuccessnow.com/insiders. It is. And for those coaches and consultants that are using AI, don't be afraid to let your clients know that AI is your thought partner, right? Don't be afraid. Don't try to say that you've come up with all of this great stuff and it's just you. Let them know, because what you're letting them know is that you know how to use the tool. Right? Your genius is still in there. It goes into the prompt, it goes into the questions, it goes into the discussions, and ultimately in the final product that's produced. But don't be afraid to let them know how you're getting there.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, James. I think about this a lot when I talk to lawyers or management consultants, because normally their point of view is, oh, the client can't know we're using AI. And exactly, my response is the opposite. My response is, why would I hire a lawyer who is dumber and slower than the other lawyer? And to me, a lawyer without AI is going to be dumber and slower, and therefore likely bill me more, which is not a good, as a customer, that's not a good cocktail. And so as a minimum, I'll pay the same, but I want the work done faster. And I want my lawyer to have, to your point, all the tools available, all the best tools available. I want my lawyer to be using them, or my management consultant or my coach, whatever. I agree 100%. I think that sort of high-end knowledge workers are going to realize that's what clients expect, that they expect their vendors, their service partners to be using the best tools. And that includes AI, for sure.
We talked a lot about AI, the uses of AI, but are there things in terms of human connection and what AI can't do right now?
For sure. There's so much that AI can't do. And again, that's why I think the way to think about AI is a co-pilot. The visual analogy I like, James, is a tandem. And two people on a bike, the same bike, the humans in the front, the AI is behind us as the co-pilot. I do think co-pilot was a genius of choice in terms of describing what AI. I'm not sure who came up with this idea of using co-pilot as the way to describe a kind of the product description of AI, but I think it is the right one, right? We want them as co-pilots, not pilots. We want them sitting behind us. If you're the first rider at the front of a tandem, you determine where to go, you determine when to stop for lunch, you determine the pace and the speed of the cycling, of the pedaling, and so on. We want the humans driving, and that includes things like really knowing what matters in the moment. When I use AI, it's never contextually completely relevant and up to date. It's always, its knowledge isn't in the moment of what matters to me. So I think that we'll always need humans here. We need humans to bring that sort of relevance, context, meaning in the moment to the work or to the problem or whatever it is, or to the creation, whatever you're creating, whatever it is. But yeah, there's so much room for humanity. At the same time, I think that there's a lot of room for AI to isolate us in some ways. Like we can, I'm sure, people have, right, fallen in love with their AI companions. And we can overly rely on these AIs, like we have on social media to get our news and information and social connection in a digital format. I think there is a real risk here, particularly young people that are going to be AI native, that they're over relying on their AIs and they're not getting out and talking to humans and they're not talking to a real human thought partner, but they're talking to their AIs for hours and hours at night sitting in front of a screen. So I worry about that for sure. I think we're going to have to learn together as a species. Humanity is going to have to learn together how to thrive with AI, not lose our humanity, not get addicted to it, but leverage it to do great work and to be more productive, hopefully to find the cure for cancer, and hopefully all these breakthroughs that big tech are telling us might happen with the intelligence of AI, hopefully we can make some of those come to pass.
I think that's great. I do want to circle back to earlier on, we were talking about kind of you being on the precipice, making this decision. You went home, you saw your wife, that changed your mind, but you just talked about your general journey. So if there's someone who is listening and they find themselves in that moment of work, this business, this task, this thing that I am doing, it's starting to feel overwhelming and I feel like I got to drop everything to pour into this business. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, my advice is stop, slow down, pause. Find a quiet space and moment and try to shut your ego down or try to shut your inner critic down. I think what drives in moments is fear, anxiety, a failure, the inner critic. You're not successful yet, or if this fails, you'll look like this or this. We just all this kind of mind chatter, right? Where the ego is really imposing itself on us in not a positive way. And so you have to catch yourself. Find a way, maybe with a partner, a friend, when you're in those moments, to really catch yourself and get a little bit of distance or perspective. Don't make any quick decisions. Like step back, just step back, cool off a bit, settle the ego down, settle the inner critic down, and really think about what will matter in a year or two or three. Try to open up your aperture in terms of perspective and timeline. What happens is we get gripped by these moments and we get, so that our vision gets narrower and narrower, right? And we've got to pull out from that and realize, yeah, it's probably not as bad as it looks. It's probably not as good as it looks either. When it's good, it's probably not as good as it looks. And when it's bad, it's probably not really that bad. If you can just get a little perspective on it and remind yourself what matters, that's what I'd suggest.
That's great advice. So what is next for you in the evolution of the companies and the things that you guys are working on?
I would like us to not just upskill employees and help teams adopt AI. What I really want to do is help them change how they work with AI so that they can come up with new products and new services. The promise of AI is not about making us more productive so we can read more email, deal with more Slack messages or whatever. But that's what's going to happen probably in the short term. What I really want for all of us, myself and my own team and my own family, I want us to be able to use AI in a way that will really create space. We typically go to the efficiency and productivity gains first when new technologies come along, and then we start to think about what new can be created. So I'm anxious to get through this kind of initial phase of AI. And I want to get to the next phase, which is how do we build things that are new, that don't exist, that are better? What is a new product or service that is AI native or AI powered that we can create?
Essentially, what you're describing is how can you use AI to unlock innovation?
Absolutely.
So what's one insight, what's one mindset shift, and one small step that you'd like for the listeners to take as a result of listening to this episode?
I'm going to answer with one answer for all three of those questions, I think, which is, I think we should begin to think about what we do as a series of experiments rather than outcomes or tasks or bigger objectives. I want all of us to break everything down, kind of our work, our life even, as a series of experiments. And then think about it as most experiments will fail. Some will meet expectations, and only one or two will really generate good returns. That's typical in any kind of experiments or investing or entrepreneurship. Most things don't work out. A few kind of are okay, and then one maybe is a real hit. Like, I want us to approach life that way. I want us to approach our work that way. I want us to let ourselves off the hook that everything has to work out well. That's not the right mindset. I think that is a really tough mindset to manage too. I think it creates a lot of stress and anxiety for all of us. It's high expectations. It's just, I think a better way to think about life is it's a series of experiments. The more you run, the better. The faster and smaller those experiments are, the better. You get a better feedback loop faster. Cost of failure is low. And you can lower your expectations for all those experiments.
Greg, if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Greg at sectionai.com, sectionai.com, or just go to sectionai.com and you can find me there. Or you can find me on LinkedIn. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you. And we'll provide a code, James, for your audience, a discount code. So we want your audience to get access to our AI Academy. So we'll provide in the show notes, you can provide a discount code and make it easier for people to get access to what they need to thrive in this age of AI.
Thank you. And the audience will thank you for that as well. And we'll make sure that we include that in the show notes. And so the last thing is I get to the segment where I switch things around, where you become the interviewer and I'm the interviewee. What questions do you have for me?
Yeah, I'd love to hear who makes a great client for you. When you think about the clients that you've been able to help the most and create the change for, what did they bring? What was it about them that made them great clients?
Wow, it's a great question. I think they come to the table with a sense of curiosity. They have tried things and they realize that what they've tried isn't working. They want to grow their companies. They want to grow as individuals, and they're hitting these roadblocks, and they're looking for a trusted thought partner that has an engineering background. Even if it's not the same technical engineering discipline that they've studied, that can come talk to them and meet them where they are.
All right. My second question is, what would be the one piece of advice you would give one of your clients or anyone that they could do on their own when you're not around, when they face one of those roadblocks and their kind of anxiety is rising, their frustration's rising? What would your piece of advice be to, hey, here's a practice or here's something you could do to be able to step back from that?
For me, it's always applying self-compassion. So what would you say if this was your best friend going through this same situation? What advice would you give to them? You would likely be very compassionate. You would tell them that, hey, this is a tough time, but you're going to be able to make it through it. It's not going to be easy, but you can do it. Don't judge yourself. And I think we have to learn to apply that same level of compassion to ourselves.
That's great advice. I need that advice, James. I've obviously heard it before. Love yourself as much as you love others. I find it hard to do.
It is hard to do because we don't understand that concept of self-love. We have this ideal that self-love and self-care is selfish. But it's not. The most selfish thing that you can do is not take care of yourself. Because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't show up for your business. You can't show up for your team. You can't show up for your family. And guess what? You can't show up for yourself.
Yeah. No, I love it. It's great advice. Well said, James. Well said.
Greg, I've enjoyed connecting with you. And I'm going to end this episode like I end every episode of the Engineer Your Success podcast. And that's this. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that are actually following through doing it and living the life of their dreams, creating the business of their dreams. And Greg, I want to thank you for being part of that select few.
Thank you. I enjoyed our conversation.